Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome to this Friday edition of Dr. Nurse Mama. As my kids would say, it is Fri-yay. I mean, just yay for the weekend, even though at this time of year, it can be really difficult because the weekends are packed with things too, but it's just a different kind of hectic. Listen, today is Friday, and we have been talking about trying something new. If you're a regular listener, we're going to make Fridays Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, and I'm going to share with you some of the answers to questions that I've been getting from people throughout the week. Now, that can be people in my community, people in my clinical practice, from my social media, or through my website. And so please feel free to continue to send in those questions. I may not be able to answer every question, but I am going to do my best to try. Now, what are we going to talk about today? What is on my radar? Well, it is the holidays. And, you know, we've been talking a little bit about older kids. And I think at Christmas, sometimes the focus is on the younger kids. And so I'm going to talk today, answer some questions that I've been getting about college kids coming home for Christmas and how you prepare for that. Now, if you don't have a college kid, then I promise you know a college kid or you know someone who has a college kid. And these tips can apply to you, and they can also apply to parents with younger kids or older young adult kids as we're trying to navigate this Christmas season together where we have family pressures and stressors. So I'm going to give some tips for success on that and making that transition peaceful and enjoyable. And I'm also going to talk about some of the threats that I'm seeing college kids face. Now, as a preview, we'll be talking about stalking, cyber stalking, and dating violence. And this is an important conversation that you can have with your kids, either when they're home from college, or it really applies to high school kids as well, or even young adults. And then at the end of that, since we have also been talking about storytelling, and listen, I have a heartbeat for storytelling. Science shows us it's how we learn best. I'm going to share one of my favorite Christmas stories with you in the last segment of the program. And if you've been listening, you know that even though my kids are older, I still read to them out loud. I still have that, you know, Little Women kind of ideology, like, oh, let's all sit around. Now, my kids aren't going to say, oh, yes, Marmy sits and reads to us and it's so beautiful. They kind of like, yeah. But then they want to know more. And they ask me, oh, are you going to read? And I love to read to my kids. So I'm going to model that for you. So that's our show for today. I hope you stick around. In addition, we are going to give away a copy of my book, Behind Closed Doors, A Guide to Help Parents and Teens Navigate Through Life's Toughest Issues. We've been doing a lot of giveaways for December, so trying to model that generosity that we need to have and express that it's feeling in our hearts. And we've had callers from Mississippi, Iowa, North Carolina, Kentucky, Arkansas, Mississippi, and Tennessee. Now, I'm in Texas, and we've had no Texans yet. So come on, maybe today will be the day that we have that representation. So stay tuned because we're going to do that giveaway soon as well. All right, with that, let's dive in. Now, I am getting a lot of questions about transitioning home for college kids. It is such a difficult time. And what I see is that there is often a very big mismatch in expectations. And we as parents, a lot of times, now I've got two kids in college, so I am living this and preparing for this and preaching to myself. And I certainly don't get everything right. But when our kids are going to come home, you know, we think, oh, we have missed them. We can't wait to be together. And we're having these, you know, visions of hot chocolate around the fire and maybe watching our favorite Christmas movie together and just being together. And they come home and they're depleted and they are exhausted and they just want to chill and to disconnect. And you're like, really? You've been gone and then now you're just going to come home and you don't want to talk to anybody or do anything? And really? So let's talk through some of those things. Now, as we're starting and looking at the Christmas season, hear me say loud and clear, y'all, it is okay if you don't have a perfect Christmas. Children want your presence. They want you to be there more than they want your presents, your gifts. And if you don't believe that's true, I would challenge you. Can you name every single gift that you got when you were 12 years old? Most of us cannot do that, but we can remember experiences we had. And most importantly, when we look back at the holidays of our childhood, we know how they made us feel. We know if it was a happy time that warms our heart, or if it was a time that kind of makes us cringe to look at pictures and think that was awkward, that was painful, that was full of conflict behind those smiles. So it is okay if you do not have a Pinterest-worthy Christmas. You don't have to have a family picture and matching pajamas. You don't have to go to a Christmas tree farm. You don't have to ride the Polar Express. You don't have to have a, you know, Pinterest-proof baking day, although the Nailed It from Pinterest, if you haven't seen that, is pretty hilarious. That would be me because I really don't cook very well, and sometimes failure can be entertaining. But you don't have to have all of those things to have a perfect Christmas. So before we even talk about some of the tips for college kids, you gotta let those expectations go and realize that life is messy. Life isn't perfect. You're going to forget a gift. You're going to get a gift that you're excited about and they're not. You know, all of those things will happen. So let's talk about specifically college kids coming home. Now, it's easy for us as parents to get super sentimental about those really tender, special days when our kids are young. I'm talking about days of, you know, the flannel-footed pajamas and bikes, you know, that are waiting by the fire for the morning and eyes that are wide and just amazed by everything. And a lot of times, parents, we communicate that we love that version of our kid. We love that stage of parenting more than we love our kid now and more than we love that current stage of parenting. And we would say, oh, no, that's not true. They're just different. But our kids don't feel that. They feel like you love who I used to be more than who I am becoming. And so when they come home, recognize that this is another really difficult transition and they're growing. And especially if you have a college kiddo who's a freshman or away at school for the first time or away for a job for the first time, or maybe they are coming home for the first time after having their own family, recognize that they may be a different person. Especially for college kids, they've had new experiences, they've had new freedoms, they've had new freedom really to decide, how do I want my holiday to look? How do I want my life to look? And they may have been grown and stretched in ways that they weren't before, that gives them new confidence or new insecurities. And so when they come home, just recognize that they may be different, but that we communicate that we love who they are becoming just as much as we loved who they used to be. It is so hard sometimes as parents not to mourn that. And it's like, well, you know, that was back when you used to like me, or back when you used to tell me you love me or give me a hug, or, you know, back when you used to be pleasant to talk to. And we say these things kind of tongue in cheek, but sometimes we're just picturing this glorious homecoming for our kids, especially coming home from college, like a Christmas movie on Great American Family, right? But it really turns out like the nightmare before Christmas. And when our kids show up and we see this disconnect and we're so eager to see them and we feel that first twinge of rejection, we as parents, if we're really honest, and I'm talking to myself, we start the Grand Inquisition. We start asking questions, you know, like, well, what are you expecting? Well, are you just going to stay in your room all day? Well, are you going to get off your phone ever? Are you going to help around the house at all? And is this how this is going to be? But let's stop and let's look at things from their perspective. If they're coming home from a cramped dorm or university housing, they are going to be so excited about space. Now, this was something actually that my oldest daughter experienced, and I hadn't thought about. Now, I didn't go away to college. I went to community college, so I'd never had that learning, that living experience or learning experience. And she said, "Mom, I am never alone. I have a roommate. I have a community bathroom. I have shared study spaces. I never have a minute." And what she really conveyed to me was that pressure, especially as a new student, new friend groups, new situations, was that she had to be on all the time. Like she didn't have a safe space where she could just decompress. And so as soon as they get home, a lot of times, y'all, we can be that safe space for them where they just finally feel safe and they let in all of that frustration, all of that anxiety, all of that frank fear that they have been holding in. And that can be really, really hard for us to take. But sometimes if we can just step back and not take that so personally and just recognize that as a literal implosion of their feelings and just be that person who emotionally regulates. As parents, we can't help our kids regulate their emotions by matching them. We have to demonstrate and model the mood and the emotion that we want them to have. And we have to hold firm to that, even when it's really hard. Another disconnect in expectations is that, you know, we may have a packed holiday schedule. Okay, we're going to see this family member. We're going to go to your favorite restaurant. We're going to, you know, have this family fun time together. And they just want to chill and unwind and see old friends, and they see us as monopolizing their time. For independence, we see these changes and it triggers our fears, and we feel resentful of their independence, especially if I'm really honest about this. I say this a lot. It's hard. I said this yesterday when we were talking to Jim Burns. Yes, you're an adult, and yet I still pay for your life. So I pay, I say. If I'm paying for your life, I still feel like I have a say in your life. But honestly, when we see that independence, we feel a little afraid. But you know what they feel? They feel proud of it. They feel like, I'm growing. I can do things I never thought I'd do. And then when they feel proud of that accomplishment, we criticize it like it's a flaw. So these are all things that happen in the days and weeks leading up to this reunion that's going to happen in the next few days over the holiday times. And when they come home, like, you have to think about some practical things like, are you imposing old curfews and bedtimes that now frankly seem ridiculous? Like, they think, I can go anywhere and do what I want. I can go to the university cafeteria for a 2 a.m. cookie, and they encourage me to do that. And now you're going to say I have to be home by 11? And we can resent that our child wants to spend so much time out of the house, even though they're reconnecting with their hometown friends. We expect them to attend all gatherings, and we expect them to have a good attitude about it. We assume that they're going to attend church services with us, and we might use them as a babysitting service or a taxi service for their brothers or sisters or groceries. And they'll come home and they will grieve any loss of connection with their childhood, anything that's misplaced in their room, every old friend who no longer seems interested in hanging out with them. And they are unnerved by challenges too, as they wrestle with secret insecurities that come with their newfound independence. They think, do I still have a place here? Do I belong? And can I really make it on my own? So the first thing that I'd encourage parents to do is to pray about it. Pray about your heart, pray about your attitude, pray for your child as you start to transition. Now, whether they're coming home from college or bringing in new family members, a new marriage, or whatever it may be, pray about it intentionally. Ask God to give you grace and wisdom. The other things are practical. Welcome them home. Stock the fridge for sure. Give a judgment-free unwinding zone. And tell them, do whatever you want to do for the first 3 days. We'll talk more about those specific expectations when we come back. But right now, we're going to give away a book, a copy of my book, a signed copy to the first caller, to 1-888-589-8840. That's 888 888- 859-8840. First caller, I'll see you on this other side of the break, and I'll have a lot of practical tips, so don't go away.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Hey, friends, and welcome back to Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday. This is where I answer your questions that have come in either through my practice, my community, my social media, my website, and we talk about all the things that are important to you. And today we're talking about helping college kids transition home or any families who are in a life transition stage. And we were talking before the break about specific things that you could do to set your mindset. Now, I also, before the break, gave away a book. And let me tell you, we had callers in just now from Memphis, Tennessee, from Waco, Texas. That's, I got to give a little sick 'em bears there. San Diego, California. But today's winner of a signed copy of my book, Behind Closed Doors, A Guide to Help Parents and Teens Navigate Through Life's Toughest Issues, goes to Jordan from Iowa. So congratulations, Jordan, and we'll get that out in the mail to you. So when your kids come home, I'm going to say this again and back up because this is the most important thing, no matter your life stage. Are you intentionally praying about the holidays? Are you praying about the times to come and the family interactions that you'll have? Are you praying for God to give you grace and wisdom and peace and joy throughout this holiday season and to cover any of those challenging spots, especially with relational conflict? Now, when you are talking to your kids, especially your college kids or your young adult kids who are coming home, or even your older grown adult kids, it's really great to set expectations and boundaries beforehand. Yes, that might be an awkward conversation, but let me tell you, it is a lot less awkward than the conflict that happens when you're trying to figure it out in the moment. So I really encourage you, if you are worried about that at all, to set a conversation, and you can give them a what I call a pediatric choice, two choices you can live with. So for your college kids, you can text them or call them and say, hey, I know that you have a lot on your mind with finals right now. Is now a good time to discuss our vacation, our Christmas holiday together, or would you rather call me a little later today? Well, I'm fine with either of those. You can do it now or call me later today, or maybe they'll come back with and say, you know, today is really busy. How about tomorrow? But it leaves it with specific outcome. And then just say, you know, I want to make sure that we are setting each other up for success for this holiday season. And I'd like to know what your expectations are of how this is going to go. And I'd like to share with you my expectation. And let's talk about how we're going to respect each other and make sure that we have a good time. Now, some of those boundaries might be around chores or helping around the house. Like maybe to you, like they used to do the dishes before they went off to college, and now they come back and you think you should still do the dishes. Or maybe they're even married and you think if you're here and you're eating in my kitchen, you're going to wash my dishes. What about driving their siblings around, or a curfew, or telling people when you're coming or going, or even having to ask permission? Do they need to ask permission or just notify you? What are your expectations for family time and how much they should be there and for what? And for who pays for what? Who is paying for meals or activities that they're going out to do? All of these things, if you look at it, those are all things that definitely happen over the course of a holiday break, especially for teens and young adults. And if you don't talk about those boundaries beforehand, then you can likely all of a sudden find yourself fighting all the time and feeling like everything's a point of contention. So I think just helping frame what are those main things, like what are your expectations for how they're going to spend their time in your home? and who is going to pay for what they're doing and how they're going to tell you when they're coming or going. And what are those family events that are really non-negotiable to you or very, very important? And so talk about those things. Now, when kids first come home from college, they often have been doing finals. They have been staying up until 4 o'clock in the morning, eating who knows what kind of junk food, the kind of food that we shouldn't eat anymore when we're at that age. But, you know, kids will do that. And they've been trying to say goodbye to their friends and stressed about their grades. And when they come home, you may just need to offer them a 3-day grace period or whatever that may be. Say, hey, for 3 days, you can binge out on, you know, your favorite show. You can sleep as late as you want to. You don't have to help or do anything. But after those 3 days of recovery, here are our expectations. And another way to do this, another creative way, is to send them a checklist of the top 10 things that they want to do over Christmas. So maybe send them a list of 10 things that you really want to do that are important to you as a family, but have them check the top three. Like, these are the ones I really, really want to do. And then you can think about, okay, these are the things they're most likely to engage in with a good attitude and be eager to do. And you can prioritize those things. That can be really, really helpful. And some of the things that they want are, again, and this is for teens. Now, here's an idea. If you have teens at home, a lot of times a question that I get asked is, what should I buy my teen? Now, I talked earlier in the week about experiential gifts. I think experiential gifts are so great because they are the gift of time. Yes, you're giving them something, but it's doing something together. And most of the time, you can find things that fit your budget, fit any budget. So those are really helpful. And you can look at my social media or go back and listen to our previous shows where we talked about that and the holiday survival guide. But what teens want is to sleep in late with no guilt trip. So write it down and wrap it up and give them a sleep holiday. Give them a chore holiday. Give them coupons for unlimited screen time. Wash and detail their car, or tell them you're going to stay off your phone for a day. All of those things can be really helpful and be a gift that they will definitely appreciate. Now, when kids come home from school, a lot of times they've been having to navigate new friendships. And it's important to create conversation times, intentionally curate moments for conversation. If you immediately start with questions, okay, well, tell me, who are your friends? What are they like? What did you do? It feels like the Grand Inquisition. And so just create moments for you to be able to have natural conversation. Now, a way to do this is maybe you're baking their favorite cookies. And anytime, especially for teenagers and young adults, you know, you think about the movie, and see, here's where my husband is going to troll me later because I'm going to get it wrong on a sports analogy. But there is a sports movie that says, if you build it, they will come. Now, I think in teens, it's if you cook it, they will come. If you start making their favorite dish in the kitchen at, say, 9 o'clock at night, they will come and you can sit there and eat and have an opportunity to have conversation. If you join them where they are, if they're watching a Christmas movie, sit on the couch and watch it with them and just look for those natural ways to have conversation. And one of the biggest things that they'll have had to deal with when they're at school is navigating new friendships. And it can be one of the greatest sources of joy to find their people. And it can be one of the greatest sources of angst for teens and young adults who can't find their people, who feel very, very lonely. And I think every parent has watched their child with tears in their eyes at some time or another be hurt by a friendship at some point. And so your kids may be coming home with those kinds of experiences, excitement about cultivating new friend groups, and maybe that will create some conflict because you'll feel like they're on their phone all of the time. But these new friend groups are so exciting and everybody's doing something all in different areas and they want to maintain that sense of connection. So resolve now to have some grace in your heart about that. Or maybe they come home and it's the opposite. They think, I don't know if I'm worthy of being a friend. Maybe there's something wrong with me. And so we need to help our kids recognize their own strengths and help them cultivate good friendships. So if you see maybe they have a friendship that's not so good, here are some questions that you can ask them if they're struggling with that friendship, if they disclose that to you and say, yeah, you know, this is not going so well. And maybe as a parent, you can clearly see an unequal friendship or even a dating relationship. And you think, oh, run, child, run. Like, this is not a good relationship. But if you tell them that, then again, you know, thinking back to what we've talked about on previous shows with Jim Burns and Larry Fowler, unsolicited advice comes across as criticism. That's why questions are such a better approach. And so ask them, how do you feel when you're around this person? How does their company make you feel? How do you feel when you have spent time with them? And then let them have a moment for self-reflection on that. Ask them, do you feel like they fully accept you for who you are? Do you feel comfortable being yourself? Or are there ways that they try to change you? Or do you feel pressure to be like these friends? And then you can ask them, is there genuine mutual concern? And this is a great way to point out the positive in our kids. We can say, when we're asking these questions, start it with something positive. Say, well, these are the things that I see that you bring to friendships. You are very loyal. You are extremely caring. You always remember the little things. You always do something special for a birthday. Say, are they returning that genuine mutual concern? Do they care about you? Do they check up on you? Do they check in with you? Or is the conversation usually only about themselves? And then you can tell them, what does this friendship mean to you? What would your life look like if you lost that friendship? And then gently you can help them to evaluate, are they really more concerned about the loss of that person in their life? Or the loss of the status and the access that comes with that friendship. So in other words, if I lose this friendship, I mean, I don't really feel that close to this person and I don't think that they really care about me very much, but then who will I sit with and who will I walk with to class? And, you know, if I'm not friends with this person, that's going to disrupt my, you know, our extracurricular activities or what they do. And I think one of the most important questions is, do they bring out the best in you? Do you like yourself when you're around them? Do they build you up or do they tear you down in the name of joking? And it's a great time, parents, again, to leverage that influence we have through relationship and to help them evaluate their friendships and see which ones do they want to pursue and cultivate more and which ones are okay to let go. The other thing that's hard is a lot of kids who transition from graduation, whether they're at college or at a trade school or whether they're working, a lot of those friendships from high school change, and then they can feel loss about that. And it's perfectly okay to tell them, look, God gives us friends for different seasons and different purposes. And just because your friendship is changing doesn't make it any less special or valuable in the time that you had. But we have to recognize that kids may wonder, like, why is this changing? I didn't feel like anything changed. And am I changing? And they're thinking all of these abstract things. And so a lot of times when we see our kids hurt by a friendship, our protective instincts as parent are, you know, lay down the law and just say, well, you just need to, you know, and you just need to not talk to that person. You need to not spend time with that person. You need to walk away from that friendship. And we restrict or we, you know, those things may have worked in the old days, but in today's age of constant electronic access, it's almost impossible to do that. And it makes our kids think, you just don't understand. And we reply back very passionately, if you live in my house, you will, I know you can fill in the blank, right? We all know that sentence. Try conversation instead. Empower them to voice their opinion in a safe space for consideration. Even when they're saying something and you're thinking, I know exactly how I need to fix this, it's really hard. Help walk them through that decision-making and reasoning process because their frontal cortex is learning how to do that. And the more we model that and talk through that with them out loud, the better friendships they are going to have. And so really affirm those friendships that you see that are good. Say, you know what I really like about this friendship? And affirm those positive things. Because as parents, we a lot of times will be quick to say, yeah, I don't really want you hanging around that person. I'm not sure about that person. But we don't affirm the positive in their friends. And so saying, hey, I really like this friendship that you have because I really like who you are when you're with them. They bring out the best in you. You seem really happy when you're around them. Y'all make good choices and, you know, do good things. Those things will go a long way in cultivating those. Now, sometimes friendships can be difficult. And another thing that you might see would be something we call a situationship, okay? I've gotten questions about this. So what is this? It's a casual, undefined, commitment-free dating or friend situation. And it's less than a relationship, but more than physical intimacy. So basically, friends just saying, let's hang out together. Maybe there's intimacy. Maybe there's not. Maybe we have physical interaction. Maybe we don't. But we are not going to discuss the status of our relationship. Whatever happens, no strings, no boundaries, no expectations. And we really need to empower our teens and young adults to advocate for themselves when they recognize these unequal power dynamics and to expect more, frankly, from their relationships. So signs that you can look for is if they're not ever meeting or interacting with the other person's friends or families, they don't talk about short or long-term future plans. There's no emotional connection. There is no personal questions or talking about hopes or fears. And they don't go out of their way for each other. They only engage when it's convenient. And there's no expectation of exclusivity. You don't have to explain any other dates. Parents should encourage their teens to create a list of desired characteristics in a relationship and then hold them accountable to those. Support and cultivate positive relationships in their life with a strong, healthy friend group. Support that. But most importantly, parents, the words that we speak to our kids matter. Communicating messages of value to your teen, building their self-esteem, and letting them know they're worth the wait and the effort. Those are important messages. Well, when we come back, I'll share one of my favorite Christmas stories with you, so don't go away.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at afr.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, where I've been answering your questions. And we've been talking over the last bits of the show about how to help your college kids or your teenagers transition into that holiday and how to support them and have not as much conflict, because sometimes holidays are a lot of togetherness with a lot of high pressure, high stress environments, especially for families who are navigating difficult dynamics. And so I will be praying for all of you who are listening as we all go into that holiday season. Now, one of the things that is really important to me as a mom is having traditions. I've shared with you, I have like 917 Christmas traditions, I think. And I really love the science behind traditions. And one of the traditions that we have is reading stories out loud. I think that stories are so powerful to be able to convey a point. And when we read stories about courage or stories about overcoming hardship or stories about serving and serving others, those are really powerful. So I promised you that I was going to share one of my favorite Christmas stories, and I am going to do that now. Now, this is not my story. This is a story that was written in a book. I have, again, way more Christmas storybooks than I probably should, but I have always been a fan of books and of reading. But this one is from a book called Christmas Stories for the Heart. And this story is called An Exchange of Gifts by Diane Rayner. So it's written from her perspective. And with that said, here we go. I grew up believing that Christmas was a time when strange and wonderful things happened, when wise and royal visitors came riding, when at midnight the barnyard animals talked to one another, and in the light of a fabulous star, God came down to us as a child. Christmas to me has always been a time of enchantment, and never more so than the year my son Marty was 8. That was the year my children and I moved into a cozy trailer home in a forested area just outside of Redmond, Washington. As the holiday approached, our lightened spirits could not be dampened even by the winter rains that swept down Puget Sound to douse our home and make our floors muddy. Throughout that December, Marty had been the most spirited and busiest of us all. He was my youngest, a cheerful boy, blonde and playful, with a quaint habit of looking up at you and cocking his head a little like a puppy when you spoke to him. The reason for this was that Marty was deaf in his left ear, but it was a condition he never complained about. For weeks I had been watching Marty. I knew something was going on that he was not telling me about. I saw how eagerly he made his bed, took out the trash, and carefully set the table, and helped Rick and Pam prepare dinner before I got home from work. I saw how he silently collected his allowance and tucked it away, not spending a cent of it. I had no idea what all this quiet activity was about, but I suspected it had something to do with Kenny. Kenny was Marty's friend, and ever since they had found each other in the springtime, they were seldom apart. If you called to one, you got them both. Their world was in the meadow, a horse pasture, broken by a small winding stream where they caught frogs and snakes and searched for arrowheads and hidden treasures, or they spent afternoons feeding peanuts to squirrels. Times were hard for our family, and we had to do some scrimping to get by. Thanks to my job as a meat wrapper and a lot of ingenuity, we managed to have elegance on a shoestring. But not Kenny's family. They were desperately poor, and his mother was struggling to feed and clothe her 2 children. They were a good, solid family, but Kenny's mom was a proud woman, and she had strict rules. How we worked, as we did each year, to make our home festive for the holiday. Ours was a handcrafted Christmas of gifts hidden away and ornaments strung about the place. Marty and Kenny sometimes sat still at the table long enough to help make cornucopias or weave baskets for the tree, but then one whispered to the other and they were out the door in a flash, sliding cautiously under the electric fence into the horse pasture that separated our home from Kenny's. One night, shortly before Christmas, when my hands were deep in pepper-noter dough, shaping the nut-like Danish cookies heavily spiced with cinnamon, Marty came to me and said in a tone mixed with pleasure and pride, "Mom, I've bought Kenny a Christmas present. Want to see it?" So that's what he's been up to, I thought. "It's something he's wanted for a long, long time, Mom." After carefully wiping his hands on a dish towel, he pulled a small box from his pocket. Lifting the lid, I gazed at the pocket compass my son had been saving all those allowances to buy. "It's a lovely gift, Martin," I said. But even as I spoke, a disturbing thought came to my mind. I knew how Kenny's mother felt about their poverty. They could barely afford to exchange gifts themselves, and giving presents to others was out of the question. I was sure she would not permit her son to receive something he could not return in kind. Gently, carefully, I talked over the problem with Marty. He understood what I was saying. "I know, Mom, I know. But what if it was a secret? What if they never found out who gave it?" I didn't know how to answer him. The day before Christmas was rainy, cold, and gray, and the 3 kids and I all but fell over one another as we elbowed our way about our home, putting finishing touches on secret Christmas gifts and preparing for family and friends who would drop by. Night settled in. The rain continued. I looked out the window over the sink and I felt an odd sort of sadness. How mundane the rain seemed for Christmas Eve. Would wise men have come on such a night? I doubted it. It seemed to me that strange and wonderful things happened only on clear nights, nights when one could at least see a star in the heavens. I turned from the window, and as I checked on the ham and the bread warming in the oven, I saw Marty slip out the door. He wore his coat over his pajamas, and he clutched a tiny, colorfully wrapped box. Down through the soggy pasture he went, then under the electric fence and across the yard to Kenny's house. Up the steps on tiptoe, shoes squishing, open the screen door just a crack. Place the gift on the doorstep. Take a deep breath, reach for the doorbell, and press it hard. Quickly, Marty turned and ran down the steps and across the yard in a wild race to get away unnoticed. Then suddenly, he banged into an electric fence. The shock sent him reeling. He lay stunned on the wet ground. His body tingled and he gasped for breath. Then slowly, weakly, confused and frightened, he began the grueling trip back home. "Marty," I cried as he stumbled through the door. "What happened?" His lower lip quivered and his eyes brimmed with tears. "I forgot about the fence and it knocked me down." I hugged his muddy body to me. He was still dazed and there was a red mark beginning to blister on his face from his mouth to his ear. Quickly, I treated the blister and with a warm cup of cocoa soothing him, Marty's bright spirits returned. I tucked him into bed, and just before he fell asleep, he looked at me and said, "Mom, Kenny didn't see me. I'm sure he didn't see me." That Christmas Eve, I went to bed unhappy and puzzled. It seemed such a cruel thing to happen to a little boy who was doing what the Lord wants us all to do, giving to others and giving in secret at that. I did not sleep well that night. Somewhere deep inside, I must have been feeling the disappointment that Christmas had come. And it had just been an ordinary, problem-filled night, no mysterious enchantment at all. But I was wrong. By morning, the rain stopped and the sun shone. The streak on Marty's face was red, but I could tell that the burn was not serious. We opened our presents, and soon, not unexpectedly, Kenny was knocking on the door, eager to show Marty his new compass and tell him about the mystery of its arrival. It was plain that Kenny didn't suspect Marty at all, and while the two of them talked, Marty just smiled and smiled. Then I noticed that while the two boys were comparing their Christmases, nodding and gesturing and chattering away, Marty was not cocking his head when Kenny was talking. Marty seemed to be listening with his deaf ear. Weeks later, a report came from the school nurse verifying what Marty and I already knew. Marty now has complete hearing in both ears. How Marty regained his hearing and still has it, it remains a mystery. Doctors suspect that the shock from the electric fence was somehow responsible. Perhaps so. Whatever the reason, I am so thankful to God for the good exchange of gifts that was made that night. So you see, strange and wonderful things still happen on the night of our Lord's birth, and one does not have to have a clear night in order to follow a fabulous star. Now, this is one of my favorite stories. I really do love this story, and I love to share stories, and maybe reading out loud is not your thing. You think, I can't do that. Well, ask your kids to share their favorite story, and you don't have to read it perfectly. They want to hear you sharing stories in your own voice. Or maybe that's a story through a favorite holiday movie. One of my family's favorite traditions is watching It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart together. Now, let me tell you, one of my kids, one of my sons, he absolutely does not like any black and white movies. He doesn't like anything that was made before what he calls quote unquote modern times. I don't know how he is my son, but he is. And so we're working on that. Don't worry. But he loves this movie and he will tell me, I don't want to see it until we watch it together as a family because it's so special. So whatever that special storytelling is, I encourage you, whatever the tradition is, to have a tradition, to embrace a tradition. Another tradition that my family has had is adopting a family for Christmas. And one year, as we were adopting the family, I've shared this story before, but it was so impactful. I'll share it again here. We adopted a family whose children wanted blankets and pillows for Christmas. And my children couldn't understand this, why somebody would put a pillow on their Christmas list and not a toy or a bike or something like that. And when we went, we found that this family was living in a tractor trailer that had been converted. It didn't have any electricity or running water. And the kids, of course, found common ground and were playing together in the yard of this trailer. And when it was time to go, we had delivered our gifts and I told my son it was time to go and we were going home. And he looked at me with such innocent eyes and said, "Oh, are they going home now too?" His mind couldn't even conceive that there was someone who lived there and really would just want a pillow. And so I encourage you to adopt traditions that involve giving to others and serving others. Listen, we have more than 50 years of research demonstrating that family traditions are very powerful in providing connection and stability during times of transition and stress. They strengthen us in three ways. Traditions strengthen family in three ways. First, they strengthen our identity. They help our kids to know who they are and whose they are. They know we're the Peck family and we always whatever it is. Now, one of our traditions outside of Christmas, but especially at Christmas time, would be to have one rule about church. And our one rule was that our kids never had to ask permission to invite anyone to church, that my husband and I would figure out a way to get that kid to church if they wanted to come and they were invited, so they never had to ask us. But they strengthen our identity. So they knew we're the Peck kids, we can invite anyone we want to church and our parents will help us figure it out. The more that children know about their family history, the stronger their sense of confidence, the higher their self-esteem, and the greater affection they have for their family. That identity established through traditions also makes kids more resilient and handle stress better. The second way is that it actually strengthens our family bonds. Traditions build trust. That we're going to be there, that we're going to hold something sacred. And grandparents are a really special part of this. And grandparent involvement actually increases a child's sense of well-being. The third thing that it strengthens is that it strengthens their character. In a world that lives at the speed of a smartphone and is constantly changing, consistency is key. And consistency is not nearly as important anywhere else as it is in consistency in our faith. If your family prays before meals together or sits in church together, it means faith is important. We are going to be here. We believe. We have hope. We have joy that is beyond ourselves. And especially in attending family gatherings together, faith is important in that. So I want to go back to what I told you at the beginning. It is okay if you don't have a Pinterest perfect Christmas. Comparison is the thief of joy. Don't compare your family to other families, your traditions to other traditions, your financial means to buy or give gifts to others. Just know that God has given you to your family in a uniquely wonderful way. And you are the right person, the right time, at the right point in history. And God has placed you here for such a time as this. Thanks for joining us today. We look forward to seeing you next week. We'll be talking on Monday with Crystal Payne, the money-saving mom, and who doesn't want to save money at the holidays. And we've got a lot of great shows lined up for you. We'll see you then.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.